Running a Shopify store and drowning in shipping chaos? ShipStation can fix this for you. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels with advanced automation, batch processing, and shipping discounts that a single platform just doesn't offer. Like discounts up to 90% off major carriers. See how ShipStation can make shipping for your Shopify store better. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
This is CBS, Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Joseph Sternberg, for the Wall Street Journal editorial page, he writes political economics, and his most recent column is the institution that is vital to the 21st century success for America, but not much known about or talked about. The European Union. The elections are imminent. They take place over several days in early June, 6 to 9 is my memory. And 720 members of the legislature are to be chosen by all the Europeans voting. And by that, I mean everybody but Britain, that's no longer in the EU. Joe, a very good evening to you. 720 members. How to understand what their authority is over the countries that have traditionally been part of the historical record? France, Italy, Germany, I could go on, but what is the relationship between Brussels and Paris, for example? Good evening to you.
Hey, John. Well, I mean, the answer, as with most things involving the European Union, is that it's complicated. So in theory, the EU in Brussels does have a lot of power over issues of common continental concern. I mean, the EU is very involved in trade policy, negotiating trade agreements and managing Europe's economic relations with the outside world. Increasingly, although only sort of, they play a role in foreign policy issues, relations with the outside world. And then also Brussels has an important role in terms of managing the internal market within the EU, so making sure that all of the European Union member countries are abiding by the same economic rules and regulations and that sort of thing. So there is real power in Brussels. And the problem is who will exercise that power. So we're going to talk this evening about the European Parliament, because elections for that body are coming up next month. But that is one of three branches of the European Union governing structure. Another branch is the European Commission, which is also based in Brussels, and that is the bureaucratic arm of the EU. And then you have something called the European Council, which is basically a committee of all of the presidents and prime ministers of the 27 EU member states. So what Europeans will be voting for is the parliament, which is one third of this governing structure. And it does have some power. In theory, at least, it gets to approve or veto the head of the bureaucracy in the European Commission. A lot of legislation has to pass through the parliament, and members of the European Parliament are growing more effective at blocking legislation that they don't like or writing new laws that they would like. So, there is real power there, but there's also this problem where, again, as with so much involving the European Union, it remains clouded in a certain amount of mystery or ambiguity, which does make it difficult for voters to understand exactly what or whom they're voting for.
The big theme right now is right of center. I read this in all of the European papers I can understand. Alternative for Deutschland in Germany, Vox in Spain, the National Reunion in France, and the Brotherhood Alliance in Italy. And they're more complicated, but they're all vaguely understood as nationalist. And that's meant to be vague, because everybody has different approaches to their geography. That looks to be fresh, Joe. Never before have so many small right-of-center parties voiced their expectations for the European Union vote. And you report that there's some organizing at the parliamentary level. What authority would they have? Say they pick up a lot of seats. Can they work together, all these different languages and countries?
Well, there are actually a lot of moving parts going on in what you've just described, John, because sort of one of the problems that you've had with the European Parliament over the years is this perception that it was weak and kind of pointless. And so that has always encouraged voters to treat these as protest votes rather than votes that you cast to actually affect policy outcomes. So when people would vote in national elections where they perceived that their national parliament or president really would make a difference to their lives, they would tend to take those elections very seriously, and you would get the mainstream center-right or center-left parties tending to win those, whereas you would get more disproportionate victories for fringe parties in European Parliament elections. Now, that is expected to continue and even become a bit more so in the European Parliament election next month. The wild card here is that this is happening in an environment where the European Parliament is actually becoming more powerful. So it is going to create this situation where voters' perceptions of the meaninglessness or low impact of these parliamentary elections might not have caught up with the reality of what some of these further right or further left politicians can do once they are in Brussels. And that's going to set up a bunch of really interesting dynamics over the next 5-year term of whichever parliament ends up getting elected, because there will be potential for some of these parties to band together once they are in Brussels to try to affect outcomes, particularly on issues like immigration policy, that I think people might not be banking on right now. And the voters themselves might not be counting on that, because voters might not fully understand exactly how powerful some of these people they're electing could become.
Immigration. What I know is the small detail that Italy is overwhelmed, and that Giorgia Meloni, the surprisingly popular and successful prime minister, came into office saying, I can clear this up. I can handle this. Now the prime minister has made a speech saying it's much more complicated and expensive than I thought. It's going to require a European solution, which is a fresh concession from a right-of-center politician to say, I don't have the answers in 20 minutes. However, that points to the European Union. Does it have a plan, Joe, going forward for immigration that weighs on various countries at various times? Right now, it weighs on Italy because it's so close to Tunisia. What about the other 26?
No, this is going to be the main problem that's going to vex the European Union for years to come, because there is still this perception that the migration problem is centered on countries like Italy or Greece, that are really the places where new arrivals first arrive, because they're on the Mediterranean. And people haven't yet internalized the sense that this is a national problem. So from that perspective, it's very different from what I think the situation is in the U.S., where the southern border crisis is concentrated in states, especially Texas, that are on the border. But voters nationally will perceive it as a national problem. And I think that there's not necessarily this awareness in Ireland, for example, that Italy's crisis is also Ireland's crisis. So I think that that's one political thing that is going to have to be overcome. And then you have to deal with this issue of money. States in the north that don't perceive themselves as being on the front line of the crisis have to understand that they might need to contribute resources to countries like Greece and Italy that are bearing the brunt of this. The U.S. has a mechanism for dealing with this, because we have a federal border service that we will fund through federal tax money. Europe doesn't have that in the same way right now. And you also need to deal with a bunch of other challenges this poses to the EU, to the European legal system, and their ability to handle asylum claims speedily, and a bunch of other issues like this. I think there should be a role for the European Parliament in those discussions. We're not sure yet whether the parliament that gets elected in June will be able to play that role.
Green technology, another big story for the European Union, for the European Parliament. There are voices now who say we don't need it, we don't want to pay for it, and it's not going to happen in our country, the anti-Green. The Green Party, to my knowledge, that's most powerful is the one in Germany, but it's now a member of the coalition. tends to be hawkish about Ukraine, I'm lost about what it is about electric vehicles. Is the European Union showing itself nimble enough to adjust to the fact that the public is not buying?
Only sort of. And this, again, is going to be another big test to emerge from this election, because you end up with these weird feedback loops between European Parliament elections and national politics. Historically, what's happened is that voters cast the protest vote in the European Parliament election, and then the national politicians get scared. And so they adjust policy at the individual country level. And you can start seeing that potentially, to the extent that voters in Europe are really showing that they're fed up with elements of the green agenda. We've talked over the past months about protests against diesel taxes, especially from farmers. There's increasing pushback on the forced march to electric vehicles. And I think that to the extent that parties that oppose these green policies might end up doing pretty well in the European Parliament election, that will potentially embolden politicians at the national level that want the individual member country governments to ditch these policies. So I think that's another interesting feedback loop where you're going to have an opportunity for European voters all at one time to potentially send some signals about Europe's green agenda that could have a bit of a shock effect for a lot of national governments.
And net zero, Joe, there are certain countries that have just given up on it. Is that the European Union's general opinion, or is that, am I being too broad-based? In other words, you need to go country to country. The reason it's complicated to me reading it from this side is the war in Ukraine, cutting off access to fossil fuels that had theretofore driven an economy such as Germany's. So can we separate net zero from the starvation of Germany for fossil fuels and other countries from the green technology plans? Are those all separate categories, or are they all merged together?
Well, I think that there's definitely a lot of discontent with the economy in general, which is going to be motivating a lot of the voting, both in the European Parliament election and other elections across Europe in the months and year ahead. And that is inextricably linked to the green agenda, because higher energy costs driven by the transition to renewables is a big part of that picture. Now, what they're running into is that a lot of European politicians really believe in the net zero agenda. This is true in Brussels as much as it is in some of the national governments. So it's going to be a very difficult transition for them to get away from that. They are starting to back away from it a little bit, de-emphasizing it compared to other priorities, talking about it a little less in the run-up to this election. So there are signs that they are starting to pay attention to the voters, the signals they're expecting to get from voters. But I think that, again, and partly because European governance is so complicated and there isn't a straight line from a European Parliament election to an actual political or policy outcome, it's going to be a very complicated process for them to try to interpret the signal that voters have tried to send and then act on it.
And Ursula von der Leyen, who's standing for re-election, she's the president of the European Commission. What relationship does that have to the two controversies we've just pointed to, the immigration story and the green technology? Can the European Commission solve those without coordinating with Parliament, or does that have to all be done together?
No, it all has to be done together. And I think that really Ursula von der Leyen and the Commission would be expected to set the agenda and use their bureaucratic resources to come up with workable options for the parliament and the national governments to consider. And again, I think that she is up for re-election once we have a new parliament in the European Union. And I think that a lot of that is, there's probably going to be a bit of horse trading as part of that process about what that agenda should look like and what the parliament is going to want from the commission on some of these issues. But it's going to be complicated because she also serves the pleasure to a certain extent of the 27 heads of the member state governments. So again, there's a lot of responsibility, not necessarily a clear line of accountability.
One more story, and it floats above everything as a cloud. That's Ukraine. To my reading, the European Union is not in any fashion advocating a one position about Ukraine. Every country has a different approach, some for money, some for pro-Russia. That would be Slovakia, for example, and Hungary to a certain extent. Are they avoiding the Ukraine war for this election? Everybody sort of skipping it, Joe?
You aren't hearing a huge amount about it. And I think it's because on issues like this, the EU does need to operate by consensus. So if you have a couple of national leaders like Viktor Orban in Hungary or a couple others who are dragging their heels, it's going to be very difficult for the EU to reach a conclusion. And it's also because a lot of the military aid is flowing either through individual member governments like France or Germany, or is going to end up flowing through NATO, which exists independent of the European Union. So it can be difficult to understand at sometimes what the EU's institutional responsibility is. And that also is a difficult situation if you're having an election, because voters don't know whom they should be holding responsible for what.
Joseph Sternberg is a member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. He writes political economics. We're discussing his most recent column on the European Union vote. We're going to turn to something that's mysterious until Joe helps us understand it. What is the Rwanda plan? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets.
It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Running a Shopify store and drowning in shipping chaos? ShipStation can fix this for you. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels with advanced automation, batch processing, and shipping discounts that a single platform just doesn't offer. Like discounts up to 90% off major carriers. See how ShipStation can make shipping for your Shopify store better. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.